The growing field of occupational therapy, helping all kinds of people live life more fully. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates a 24% growth in jobs in the field of occupational therapy over the next decade. Occupational therapy began a century ago as part of mental health treatment, but it has grown to include all kinds of therapies. Today, OT practitioners help children with disabilities, people recovering from injury, those coping with a degenerative disease, older people who want to stay in their homes, and many others. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn more about OT with leaders in the field in Maine. We'll discuss the philosophy behind occupational therapy, new kinds of therapy that are becoming available, schools in Maine that offer degrees, and where the profession is headed. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. How can someone live a fuller life, especially if they're getting over an injury or illness or have a disability? Well, occupational therapists offer people the tools and skills for navigating daily life. We're going to learn how they do it and how their field is evolving today on Maine Calling. Joining me in our studio, Diane Souter-Davis. She is Program Director at Kennebec Valley Community College's Occupational Therapy Assistant Program. Kathy Adams is Director of Maine Site Coordinating Center. And Jessica Bulduck is president of the Maine Occupational Therapy Association. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you want to know if occupational therapy would be helpful for you or a loved one? Have you experienced some kind of therapy and have a story to share? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome all of you today. Jessica, I'm going to start with you. Define occupational therapy. Why is it called that? Why is it called occupational therapy?
So occupational therapy is a health profession that helps people master the things that they do every day, helps people master the things that occupy their time. It's a profession that enables people to regain independence with self-care activities, with being able to pursue leisure activities, with being able to function in a workplace. We work with children, so it's enabling children to be successful with their developmental milestones, being able to be successful in school. We work with patients and clients throughout the whole continuum of care. So we see children all the way up through older adults, enabling older adults to age in place, stay at home safely, rehabilitate after an injury or illness.
Diane, I understand that you and others in the field consider occupational therapy the best kept secret in healthcare. Explain what you mean by that.
I think we are misunderstood. I think people think that we are part of other professions sometimes, like a shoot off from another profession. I think that many people that I speak to say, if I would have found this sooner, I would have been an occupational therapist or an occupational therapy assistant because you have so much fun. So we look like we're having fun, but we're really working really hard with people.
And isn't part of the key is that you're helping people see this work as fun so that they actually do it and achieve results?
Absolutely. It's a lot better to you get better results if you're having fun.
All right. Kathy, tell us about Maine Site. And Site is C-I-T-E.
C-I-T-E, yes. Maine Site is the state of Maine's assistive technology program. So as an occupational therapist, I'm the director of that program. We're the state's program for AT, and we work with people all
AT.
Over. AT, assistive technology.
Okay.
Maine Site, assistive technology. And we work with individuals who have had disabilities and are facing disabilities on a more long-term basis to adapt and create new function for themselves using devices, equipment, technology, low-tech, mid-tech, high-tech, all kinds of equipment to assist them to be living productively and more safely and independently. Just like Jessica said, individuals of all ages, children, adolescents, adults, and seniors.
So if someone, for example, is losing their eyesight or is not able maybe to use their hands, they could work with Maine Site to work with an occupational therapist and find some equipment, some technology to help them.
main site works with providers across the state to do just that. Yes, okay. Look at assistive technologies that would assist them to increase and get back to function.
Mm-hmm. Are there a lot more? Is there a lot more AT than there used to be?
Lots more AT. It's we're chasing that marketplace all the time because most of it is now commercially available products that we see just as a device or a piece of a product or equipment, but an occupational therapist sees it as assistive device and sees it how it can apply with an individual who has a disability. Lots and lots of products in the marketplace, yes.
Diana, I understand that you became a practitioner of occupational therapy in 1979.
I did.
How has the field changed since then?
Oh, my. It's grown very much. We didn't have anything like what Kathy's talking about, assistive technology at a high-tech level. We had some low technology, which might be something like an adaptive device, like a sock donner, which is a very basic device, but we didn't have the things that we have now. We also, when I graduated, almost everybody I knew went into mental health practice or practice with people with developmental disabilities. And we have grown to be in every area of practice that can be represented. So Jessica works in acute care at a hospital, as well as being MIOTA president. Kathy works in AT. I work in mental health still. I never moved on. but it has changed a lot. We also, I think, when I went to school, we learned an awful lot about occupation. And the things that I learned in school were things like we truly did learn to weave baskets, and we truly did learn to do craft activities with people. And those were the things at the time. Those were the occupations that people used to occupy their time. And now it's all different because technology is one of the ways that people really spend time.
So sure, somebody of a certain generation might hear occupational therapy and think something entirely different than what it is today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Jessica, tell me about that, acute care OT. What do you do?
So in acute care in a hospital setting, we are often doing evaluations on patients who have come in because of an acute illness. So it could be things like pneumonia. Right now we've had a bout of patients with the flu coming in. They're very sick. And our job as occupational therapists is to evaluate, are they safe to return home? Can they do the daily activities that they need to do? Can they wash? Can they dress? Can they move around their rooms? Do they have the energy and the stamina to do all the things that they would do if they were home? The cooking, the cleaning, the taking out the trash, the getting the mail. So we're assessing their safety to go home. We are assessing with other colleagues as physical therapists and nurses as well, if they need rehabilitation to go to another level of care, to go to a center where they can get more occupational therapy, more physical therapy. Or we're assessing that they can go home maybe with some additional oversight, some supervision, or additional assistance. They could tap into home health therapy services or outpatient therapy services if needed. So really we're assessing cognition. We're looking at are they well enough to be home? Can they manage medications? Can they pay their bills? Things like that.
What kind of jobs are there in the field? I'll turn to you, Diane. I know there's occupational therapy assistants,
yes,
which is who your students, what they're going to become, or at least the first thing they're going to become. Mm-hmm. And what else is there?
Well, there is an occupational therapist, and that is at a master's degree right now. And there is an occupational therapy assistant, which is an associate degree. And they work together to form a team. They work with, they both can work together. An occupational therapy assistant needs to have supervision from an occupational therapist. But they work together in all different practice environments. So they can work in a school system. They can both work in early childhood development. They can work in hospitals. They can work in skilled nursing facilities. They can work in assistive technology. They can, the sky, I tell my students, the sky is the limit. You really have to look at what's out there, what do people need, and then go, okay, this is what I think people really need. We have people that work in again, still in mental health, or people that work in working with people that have sensory limitations that affect their occupations. So whether it is inpatient, outpatient, home health care, school systems, it's the sky is the limit, and there's a lot of new opportunities coming up, too.
I'm wondering if each of you, and Kathy, I'm going to start with you, has a story, a particularly gratifying case of where you were able to help someone who really felt as though he or she wasn't going to be able to do something and could.
I do. I was working with a young man from a rural northern part of the state of Maine who came to southern Maine to have an adaptive driver evaluation. And this individual came all the way down from the county and had the evaluation. And within a half hour of being behind the wheel of a car driving with an adaptive hand control, he was driving safely, independently. And he was just so psyched out and so gratified that he was going to be able to achieve that and get back behind the wheel of a car. He actually tried to get, he says, can I borrow the car? I want to drive home in it. And he was so excited and his family was so excited. But it was just a really great experience to work with him to open up that door to that independence and that renewing that freedom that he was going to have using that technology and that device.
So was this someone who had lost use of his feet and was controlling
that? Yes, it was someone who had a spinal cord injury, a low-level spinal cord injury, and was going to need relatively simple adaptive device to get back driving. But to him, it was just a critical, essential piece of equipment to just get that freedom.
Jessica, your turn.
I have lots of stories that I could tell, but one of my favorite stories, early in my career, I was working in an inpatient rehabilitation center, and I was working a lot with patients that have had a stroke. And so these folks would present to therapy with sometimes difficulties with their sitting balance, difficulties using one side of their body. And in particular, we had patients that would come in that were either new moms, relatively new moms that had a stroke for whatever reason after their delivery or soon after. And, you know, their biggest concern was not so much for themselves, it was how am I going to take care of my child? How am I going to feed them, dress them, bathe them? So we really were able to tap into some of the critical skills that patients need to be able to either do things one-handed or hopefully over time be able to rehabilitate to using two hands. So just being able to work with patients who are really driven, that they know that they have these things that they want to do with their lives. They want to be parents. They want to be spouses. They want to be able to be productive people. And just the outcomes that they have in sometimes just a few months of therapy, that they went from not being able to move their bodies themselves at all to being able to almost pretty much walk out of a rehabilitation center, maybe with some adaptations. But they have found ways to compensate for some disabilities that they have to be able to return to maybe a different life than what they had before, but something that they are proud of that they achieved is always amazing to see.
Mm. Diane, your turn.
My practice when I was my clinical practice has always been in working with adults with persistent mental illness. And most of the time I worked in the community, so my job was to make sure that they could do the things that they needed to do, the occupation that they needed to perform in the community. And a lot of the people that I saw were people who were in and out of the hospital. They would get so far, and they would have a fall backwards, and then in their recovery process, they would go forward again. So there are a number of people that I can point to who I think really felt like they had major success when they could, through skills training, learn to stay in their apartment, learn to go to the grocery store and choose foods that they were healthy for them because we worked on that, but that they could be successful taking care of themselves, and they never thought they could.
So I was going to ask you, I can understand easily how occupational therapy might help a stroke, somebody who's had a stroke, but how does that work in a mental health setting? So is it somebody who might be overwhelmed by the grocery store, teaching them the skills to not be?
Absolutely. That's one thing. Sure. We would look at strategies, for example, when you go to the store, developing habits and routines around when you went and what you bought and how you actually moved through the grocery store. So most people start right at the beginning. We would work maybe at starting at the end of the store and working backwards so that it wasn't as busy. So that's one way we would do that. Occupational therapy, like you had asked me the question before, that it's very unique. And one of the things I think we all see is that we're all doing the same thing, but the strategies we use are really different. So I might be teaching somebody in mental health how to be able to communicate assertively instead of being angry, how to cook for themselves and cook safely, how to take care of their bills in the same way that Jessica was talking about. It looks different. I call it the chameleon of healthcare services, because wherever you go, it looks completely different, but we're doing the same thing, helping people be independent.
We're talking about occupational therapy. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I read this morning, Jessica, that the Bureau of Labor Statistics predicts a 24% growth in jobs in this field. If you're talking to someone interested in going to this field, give us a sell. Why do I want this job?
This, as a career in occupational therapy, it is such a broad career. Like we were mentioning, there's a lot of different places you can work. You can work across the continuum of care. There are new emerging areas to our practice. The sky's the limit in terms of where you want to practice, how you want to practice, who you want to work with. It's such a versatile career that it's worthwhile for the investment to attend college, to obtain a degree. And it's a lifelong learning experience, I feel like, for myself. And I think it's so rewarding to see patients, to see clients really be successful and be able to live a successful life as well.
All right. Who are your students, Diane? Are they 18-year-olds or not?
Not typically. Typically, we have a range. We do have those folks from right out of high school. But then we have people who are coming back from, they may have a four-year degree, and they're coming back to get a very particular degree because it works, because there are jobs, and there's nothing better than if you're a helper kind of person to do the sort of work we do. But we also get second career folks. We get a lot of people who have raised their children, have had a career, want something that they really want to do. They may have said, I think I want to do this, but life didn't take them there, and now is their chance to do that. So we've had people graduate who are 62, 63, and they're working. Pretty exciting.
Kathy, I understand just recently you've done some work with the Area Agencies on Aging. I always have a hard time getting that exactly right. What kind of work are you doing with them?
We did. We created a project, a collaboration with, there are five Area Agencies on Aging in Maine, and we have collaborated with all five of them and done on-site in-service trainings and presentations with their staff to bring them into the knowledge of what types of assistive technology are important for seniors and for family members and for caregivers, so that people of that group and their constituents who want to live in their homes and in the communities longer and longer and avoid moving into facilities, hopefully for their whole life or longer periods. So we've gone to each one of the five agencies on aging, each five location, and each of them regionally, and provided about an hour and a half in service. Also, we left with them. We went through 15 different pieces of low-tech and mid-tech types of technologies and devices at each of those locations, and we left them with those teams so that they now have those pieces of technology so that they can show them when they're working with families and clients.
Sure, this whole concept of aging in place,
yes,
is such an important trend right now, and more benefits shown from people being able to stay in their homes longer, and assistive technology is making that possible.
Yes, smart technology. It's a great new opportunity for people to look at and to begin to use. Yes.
Well, guess what? We have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. We're talking about occupational therapy. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And Efficiency Maine, helping businesses reduce operating costs and increase profitability through energy efficiency. EfficiencyMaine.com.
Puerto Rico wants to open charter schools, even as it struggles to recover from Hurricane Maria. Unions say the government is taking advantage of the chaos to privatize the system. Officials disagree.
I don't think this future generation of Puerto Rico has any more time to wait. I have an obligation to do something to improve this system.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Calling is looking for a new sound. It's time to retire our current theme and replace it with, well, do you have any ideas? It has to be an original piece of music that captures the spirit and essence of Maine Calling. Are you a musician, a composer? Please visit mainepublic.org and click on radio and then Maine Calling. There you'll find more information. We hope to have the new theme in place by May. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the growing role of occupational therapy. With me in the studio, Kathy Adams, who is director of Maine Site Coordinating Center. Jessica Bulldog is president of the Maine Occupational Therapy Association. And Diane Souter Davis is an occupational therapy program director at Kennebec Valley Community College. I always call it KVCC. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Melissa Tilton, who is the director of the board of the American Occupational Therapy Association. Melissa, thanks so much for calling in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Am I right? Were you a student of Diane's?
I was. I was lucky enough to be part of the second class, actually, at KVCC back in, I graduated in 95.
Wow.
Was one of her students.
Well, tell us your story. How did you come to the field of occupational therapy? How did you know about it in 1995?
Sadly, which I think is different now than it was then, when I was in high school, I had not heard about occupational therapy. I had heard a lot about physical therapy, of course, but I hadn't heard anything about OT. And my family had moved up to Maine when my dad retired from the Air Force, and I started working at a Y camp in Oakland. And it was a day camp, and I happened to work on the waterfront with two ladies. One happened to be an OT, and one happened to be a PT. And, you know, through my summertime swimming and lifeguarding with them, I started to hear their stories about the things they were working on, the things that, you know, really kind of jazzed them up in their everyday job, the difference they were making. And I started to talk with Cass. She was the OT. And it really just resonated with me. It made sense for what I wanted to do. It was really exciting. And that's when I applied. And I look back now and I'm extremely grateful I was able to get right into the program.
The American Occupational Therapy Association advocates for the field. What challenges face occupational therapists nationally?
So I sit on the board. I'm one of the directors on the board. There's quite a few of us who sit on the board. And I think one of the biggest things is really being able to do things like this with you, to be able to educate folks about our distinct values of occupational therapy. People don't know what it is. And, you know, people easily misconstrue. I can't remember if it was Kathy or Diane who said they think we might be an adjunct to something else. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And with that challenge is then making sure that folks know what do we do and what are the outcomes that we provide. So how can, you know, reimbursement systems, how can they know what we do and ensure that we're part of being reimbursed, the services that are being provided, looking at all the different avenues that we're providing the services. We have to really work hard to educate, to talk about our diverse value, and then also show our outcomes. And then they'll reimburse for that. And then as that opens more doors for us, it becomes a little bit of an easier conversation. But the advocacy piece is something that we're doing ongoing all the time.
Well, Melissa Tilton, thank you so much for joining us. Director of the Board of the American Occupational Therapy Association, who got her start right here in Maine. I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to move on to Bree, who's calling from Rumford. Hi, Bree. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I'm an OT practicing in the home health field here in the Rumford area in Maine. I cover 13 towns with Andrew Scoggin Home Health, and I actually started my own business on the side to kind of do a preventive for. I keep seeing people a lot of times with falls in the home, so I actually started a home modification assessment to try to prevent those falls, and it's really great, and it really can help people stay in their homes safely, and it kind of, I'm no longer aggravated by seeing people who maybe had their grab bars placed in the wrong place. And there is no, just to let you know, there is no funding for this, but I wanted to put a shout out that both Senator Angus King and Representative Bruce Poliquin both have bills in the Congress that are trying to get help with the discount on or a tax saving for seniors for items like grab bars and ramps and that stuff. So, you know, it's worth calling in and letting them know that you support that.
All right. Well, Bree, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck with your business. We have an email here from Eric. He writes, if occupational therapists describe or prescribe a device or equipment to assist with daily life, independence, or at work, what funding is available to acquire the device? When would MaineCare cover it? Do employers help fund equipment or school? If I have to buy it myself, say a roll-in shower, might there be tax benefits? What do we know?
This is Kathy. We know that there are lots of opportunities for various funding on the MaineSight website, mainesight.org. We have a whole section on funding for assistive technology and equipment. The MaineCare system is quite advanced in this area, and we have five different policy areas of MaineCare called MaineCare waivers that recognize the importance of assistive technology for people living in the community and assist in supporting the costs of that. Also, vocational rehabilitation pays for assistive devices and technology when an individual is living with a disability and they're going to pursue education and pursue returning to work. So there are some pretty robust funding opportunities, and we work with all of those in Maine and provide that resource information at MaineSight.
All right. A tweet from Jim. I have had fine motor control issues my whole life. Can't pick up a pin to save my life. Any suggestions to help in my struggles to play the banjo?
That is a good one. That is a good question. I don't play the banjo, so I'm having a little hard time relating to the exact techniques with that. Oftentimes, if someone's having difficulties with fine motor coordination, we're looking at trying to make things bigger. So using a bigger pen to write with. Using some low-key assistive devices like magnets if you're trying to literally pick up pins or pick up coins. In terms of instrument playing, I have worked with clients before that with the occupational therapist, you can make little finger splints or little picks for your fingers that you can attach to your fingers to help with picking the strings.
Go ahead.
I think there's also an app that you can download that's a digital banjo that you could play on a smart device. That would be worth trying. I know there are digital instruments that people play and that schools use with children who have disabilities so that they can create music.
If Jim wanted to work with an occupational therapist who is really tuned into working with musicians, where would he go? How would he find out where someone is?
Well, definitely you can contact the Maine Occupational Therapy Association. We can be a resource to help people find OTs in their area. Sometimes just talking with your primary care providers, they might have a sense of who's in the area as well. Sometimes just a good Google search will get you more information about who is available in your area.
I think also calling your local hospital and finding out who's around, who's there, and do a little chain search. So if there's an occupational therapy practitioner in the hospital, they may likely know somebody that can help.
Okay, we'll go to Bill, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Bill, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. What can an occupational therapist do for somebody with dementia caused by frontotemporal degeneration, which is can have similar aspects to Alzheimer's?
Good question, Bill. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So for occupational therapists working with clients with dementia, depends on what exactly we're trying to work on. If it's working on home safety, we might be doing a home health through home health agencies, a home safety evaluation to see how can we make the home safer for somebody to be able to access their shower, be able to move around the home safely. We might be offering compensatory strategies to enable people to find different rooms in their home, trying to simplify daily activities or daily chores. Again, it really depends on how the client is presenting with their deficits. We might be looking at memory strategies or ways to compensate for being able to open devices, being able to open up medication bottles, for example, being able to identify their clothing, which what is the front, what is the back of their clothing to be able to get dressed, being able to look at different leisure pursuits. What are things that people like to do? Listen to music, listen to the radio, did they knit, did they crochet? It's really, we do an assessment of patients to really figure out what is it they want to do with their lives and what skills do they need to rehabilitate or compensate for to be able to get them to do things they want to be able to do.
Diane, you're nodding.
I am in agreement, and I think some of it depends on what the person really wants to do. One of the things that an occupational therapy practitioner will ask is more what matters to you, not what instead of asking what's the matter with you. I think we want to know what's going to motivate somebody and what it is they really want to do. What are the occupations they really want to do? What's meaningful to them? The other thing that's important is to look at what stage in the process. What are they really having trouble with? So is it communication? Is it dressing? Is it finding things? I think modifying is a really important thing. Modifying an environment. So we might do an assessment to look at how is their cognition and what is it that we are able to modify so that they can continue doing it. We may not change the process, but we want to be able to make them as successful as they can be through modifications.
And we also do a lot of training with the caregivers as well. It's really important to provide support to caregivers so that they are able to cope with change of their loved ones, as well as provide them with the resources they need to be able to sustain somebody at home.
Bill, thanks for your call. We have a tweet from the University of Maine Center for Community Inclusion and Disability. Question for the panel: how do individuals with disabilities and their families or support staff learn to use the assistive technology that's recommended by their OT or other provider, particularly when the assistive technology when the AT involves technology? What training is available?
That's a great question. This is part of the whole continuum of assistive technology assessment. You have the therapist working with the individual, assessing their abilities and functions, helping them determine what technologies are going to work best for them, borrowing that technology from one of the main loan programs to try it out, see if it will make a difference for them, and then acquiring the technology and then getting it in the hands of the client and then learning about it. There are numerous therapists and resources in the state to do that part. Sometimes an assistive device only needs one or two sessions to learn how to use it. Other times that particular client might need four or five sessions. And so the therapist looks into the crystal ball of their knowledge and kind of projects that for the client and the family and makes those arrangements and puts that you have to put that device to use, absolutely, in the end. You have to make it work for the client and impact that outcome.
Sure, and technology is only good if you know how to use it, right?
Exactly.
No matter what it's for.
Exactly.
We're
going
to go to Alex, who's calling from Rochester, New Hampshire. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a person with a disability in the form of a mental illness, and I eke by on a very meager monthly fixed income of approximately $800 a month. That includes food stamps, about $40 a month in food stamps. The only way I can survive is because my rent is partially subsidized, and I would like to have some form of occupational therapy so that I can, you know, start out small, get a part-time job, and eventually work my way up to supporting myself financially, you know, as I am able to recover from my illness. And I realize that I've been on disability for decades, and it's very demoralizing to live in poverty and to not be able to support myself financially and to have to go to soup kitchens on a regular basis to be able to eat. And I'd like to be more politically active, and I've tried to contact my legislators, for example, to let them know about how people like myself just barely eke by in a kind of dehumanizing way while we, you know, spend billions and billions of dollars on war after war overseas. And I thought to myself, there need to be more people like myself who actually run for political office. The more people we have with mental illness, for example, or other forms of disability who themselves have experienced economic injustice. Maybe.
Alex, is your question for our panel about access to occupational therapy and how to access that?
Yeah.
Any thoughts? I think everybody on our panel is based in Maine and not New Hampshire, but do you have some thoughts for Alex, any of you?
I think that I would begin, Alex, with looking at, is there a local mental health center near you that might have occupational therapy or might have access to occupational therapy? So that would be a first step, I think, is just finding out what places in your area might have occupational therapy practitioners that would help you with getting you started. For example, maybe getting a small job that actually fit you, that really worked with your skills.
And ought Medicaid to help him cover that? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm also thinking of the piece of the puzzle that is vocational rehabilitation that become self-refer to, in Maine anyway, to a vocational rehabilitation office, acquire and get a rehab counselor, and they can, through their resources, assist you with purchasing assistive technology or occupational therapy services, because their whole goal is getting their clients either into a new form, advanced education, into a career, or directly into work and employment arena, whether it be part-time or full-time, but becoming wage earners. Yes.
And one other option, if I can say, Kathy made me think of it. There are organizations called clubhouses, and their clubhouses are for people with persistent mental illness, and they have programs where there are occupational therapy practitioners that work in them, but they are programs that are designed for getting people transitional jobs that would be full-time jobs. You start there, and then you move into the job that works for you, and an occupational therapy practitioner could help you find that right job by assessment.
Alex, good luck to you. We do have to take another quick break, but before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to the movies, or at least talking about them, before the Oscars ceremony this weekend. What have you seen? What did you like? What are you still thinking about? Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Endicott Home in Scarborough, now celebrating their March event, committed to eco-friendly, customizable furniture, condofurniture.com. And University of Maine at Presque Isle, offering free and reduced tuition for eligible Maine families, umpi.edu.
On the next Speaking in Maine, relations with China and geophysical politics.
There's not a region of the world in which China is not present and active.
Look at airports around the world, they're flooding all over the place.
Join us for Talks of Global Importance by Evan Medeiros and Cleo Pascal at the 31st Annual Camden Conference. This year's theme is New World Disorder and America's Future. That's on the next Speaking in Maine, Thursday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
To hear this week's Camden Conference Speaking in Maine programs at your convenience, visit mainepublic.org and click on radio. Starting this evening and continuing into the weekend, our annual high school basketball tournament championship weekend gets underway once again on Maine Public Television. Please note, the most accurate and up-to-date schedules for both the games and for your regular Maine Public Television programming that might be affected are at mainepublic.org. Click on television. This includes the PBS NewsHour and Nightly Business Report and Washington Week. Please note there are alternate times for these programs during the tournament.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what does occupational therapy entail? With me, Jessica Bolduc with the Maine Occupational Therapy Association, Diane Souter-Davis with Kennebec Valley Community College, and Kathy Adams with Maine Sight. Join our conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us, Polly Keniston, who's an occupational therapy assistant and also my friend. The show was her idea. Hi, Polly.
Hi, Jen.
Nice to talk to you. So thank you so much for recommending this wonderful panel. I know that you were a non-traditional student. You went back to school for your license. Why? What experience in your life led to your interest in occupational therapy?
So I became interested in OT after my second child was born. She has some special needs and qualified for services in our home. And initially, my husband and I were reticent just because she was already receiving physical therapy and speech therapy services. And we worried she wouldn't have enough time to play and be a kid. And we learned that OT believes a child's primary occupation is play and that playing is crucial to the development. So our daughter worked on her goals with a CODA and a couple of different OTRs through play-based activities. And we watched her skills develop and her confidence improve while doing things that were meaningful to her. And she looked forward to OT, and we were thrilled. The client-centered approach and holistic nature of the practice drew me in.
And it drew you in so much that you went through Diane's program at KVCC.
I did. Diane was my professor and her coworker, Julie. I can't say enough for the program. It was a fantastic education, totally a switch from kind of my previous life and my previous career, and one of the best things that's really happened to me and my family.
Diane, how does Polly's story compare with some of the others you hear?
I think Polly would agree with me that it's very similar. People find OT. They find it sometimes by going down their life path. There's not a lot of people that necessarily know about it when they're searching for their first job. It's getting better. That's getting better. But a lot of times they've had an experience. So they may have had an experience with a family member who's had a stroke, or they've had an experience with somebody, a family member who's had a spinal cord injury, or a family member who has dementia, or a child who has some sort of a developmental disability or a sensory disability. And they come to OT, they find it, or it finds them after a while. And it's a great opportunity to just learn so much about people from people and help people be the best that they can be in their life.
Polly, before I let you go, I'm going to ask you a question I know the answer to. How is your daughter doing today?
She's doing very well. She still gets OT at school on a consultation basis and some PT and speech. And she's really defied a lot of odds that were placed on her in the beginning. And I can't say how much I credit that to the therapist, their hard work, and just their client-centered approach with her. They really looked at what was interesting and fun for her, and they turned it into therapeutic tasks and activities that she was more than willing to participate in. So we really made it a family affair, and she's doing great. So thank you for asking.
Well, Polly, thanks so much for calling in. That's Polly Keniston, an occupational therapy assistant who went through Diane's program at KVCC. Jessica, tell us about what other educational opportunities are available in Maine. KVCC isn't the only program.
No, there are three others. There is the University of New England has a master's degree program. The University of Southern Maine also has a master's degree program, with their campus being located in Lewiston. And Hudson University is also the third program that offers occupational therapy.
Okay, and Maine has everything except a doctorate program now, right?
Correct.
Okay.
It's in the works with many of the programs.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Great. We'll go to Marty Groman, who's a state rep and calling in. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. Great program. I just want to make sure, since it's tax time, that people know that in Maine we do have the Accessible Home Tax Credit. You can find it on the Maine Housing website. It's kind of the signature program of Archie Vero, the former mayor of Brewer and a rep from Brewer. But it's a very nice tax credit, accessible home tax credit, so people should know about it.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in and telling us about it. I'm going to go to an email from Richard. I am the project director for Maine Agribility, a program of the UMaine Cooperative Extension that helps farmers, farm workers, fishers, and loggers with injuries, chronic illness, and disability get back to work or remain productive at work. The occupational therapists who partner with us on this outreach from Alpha One have been so valuable to these individuals. All I can say is wow. OTs are terrific. You're nodding, Kathy.
Yes, I have the opportunity to work with Dick also on the AgriBility program. I'm on the advisory panel for his project, and AgriBility does a tremendous amount of work across the whole state of Maine using occupational therapists who go right on the farm, work with farmers who are dealing with disabilities or perhaps dealing with disabilities and aging, and they want to keep working those farms and running those farms and using perhaps some adaptive strategies and technologies to do so. Great, great program, AgriBility.
All right, we're going to go to Kent, speaking of farms, who's calling from Pineland Farms in New Gloucester. Hi, Kent. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you very much for taking my call. Always a very interesting show. Yeah, I am a third-party recruiter who specializes in physical, occupational, and speech therapy. I've been in this industry for about 13 years. And one of the interesting things that I found when I moved up to Maine a few years back is actually it can be difficult in Maine for OTs to find positions. And we kind of touched on just a minute ago, I think because of the three OT schools that we have in the state, it can kind of produce a lot of OTs in the state compared to the population. So, one of the things that I would encourage anyone to do is absolutely, you know, look into the opportunities there that are in your area. I partner also with UNE and talk to a lot of their new graduates. I was just at the healthcare career fair. And very important, especially for new graduates, to familiarize themselves with the market and really become as knowledgeable as possible about all the different opportunities that exist, because it's interesting. This isn't like this in the rest of the country. OTs are in very high demand just about everywhere else, and I was surprised.
Interesting.
By the lack of OT positions here in the state.
Interesting, Kent. Thanks so much. Thoughts from you on the panel?
The market can get saturated when a graduating class, when that happens. I mean, you can have an upwards of potentially a couple hundred students looking for positions. Maybe not quite that many, but yes, the market can get saturated. I think if someone's looking to work in Maine as an occupational therapist, they just need to be persistent and really advocate for what they can provide to an employer, what they can provide to clients, and they can find positions to work.
I also think that there's one of the things in Maine that I talk to my students about is being entrepreneurial. So there may be, because of funding sources, sometimes not the job that you might want. You may have had your eye on this particular job at this particular facility. But there are so many new options out there, so many new areas that occupational therapy can work in. I always tell my students, look at the trends. Look what's happening. Kathy spoke about aging in place. Aging in place is ready. It's just ready to bloom in Maine. And we just need to take a look at what the opportunities are. And one last thing. I do know that and I can't speak for all the other programs right now, but we have a 96% placement rate. So our students are getting jobs. So it may be very varied in different parts of the state, but I think it's maybe where you might have to change your mind about where your first job might be.
With so many careers.
Absolutely.
As with so many careers. Kent, thank you so much for your call. Eileen on Facebook asks, what do you expect for OT with the repeal to the cap on Medicare? And whichever you answers this question, explain her question as well.
Who wants to tackle that question? Ooh,
how about you, Jessica? You're president of the association.
For the last 20 years, there's been a therapy cap on the dollar amount of reimbursement that a client can receive for occupational therapy. And through advocacy efforts on the national platform, that finally has been repealed with some stipulations still. And I think that information is still rolling out in terms of what that's going to look like. One place to look for that information is the American Occupational Therapy Association's website. We'll have information that people can access, consumers as well. In terms of actual dollar amounts, I don't know that I can speak to that yet.
Okay.
But I don't know if
The latest number I heard, it was actually it's kind of a movable cap, if I understand it properly. So it's at $3,000 now, but it's also for physical therapy and speech therapy. So it's all therapies. It's not just OT.
I'm going to try to squeeze in another call. We're going to try to squeeze in Beth from Blue Hill. Beth, go ahead.
Hi. You're on main calling. Hi, I love the show today, and I wanted to state the importance of getting early intervention. I have an 8-year-old daughter in school, and she receives services, and the services have gone really well, including OT, and I think that's in part because we went through child development services when she was 3 years old, and they assessed the need, and although they didn't pay for everything, our insurance had to pick up some. The history was already established so that when we got into school, it was definitely less difficult for us to receive services for her.
So your advice is don't wait.
Definitely don't wait. She's 8 years old now. We've been receiving services since she was 3. And for instance, today she showed me for the first time that she can tie her shoes by herself. So that's in large part due to her OT.
Oh, well, thank you for calling, Beth. I appreciate your call. And we are short on time, but I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. Lisa in Brunswick. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. I just called in to add a little bit to what the lovely panel has already said. I'm an OT who's been an OT for a few years, and I love it. you had asked about specific examples of interventions with different patients. And one thing that came to my mind was a gentleman I worked with, an outpatient, who had had an unfortunate encounter with a saw, and it took the end of his finger. And he ended up having a lot of sensitivity there. And we worked on that actually using some of his occupation. So we would take the sandpaper and some of the other tools and practice getting the end of the finger more used to engaging in his work again. And the thing that struck me was at one of the appointments, he looked and he said, "You are the only person who gets that this tip of my finger was really important in my life."
Lisa, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to have to cut you off there, though, because we're pretty much out of time. I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate all my guests here in the studio. Diane Souter-Davis, Program Director of the Occupational Therapy Assistant Program at KVCC, Kathy Adams, Director of Maine Site Coordinating Center, and Jessica Bulduck, President of the Maine Occupational Therapy Association. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. A note for you musicians in the audience, we've decided it is time to revamp our theme music. We're holding a contest to look for original piece of music for our theme. You can go on our website to find out more about that. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.